Okay, welcome back, everybody, to episode 17 of So Many Screens, a pop culture podcast presented by Wash Media. I am your host, J.R. Hickey, coming to you in my tank top from Palm Springs, California. Join me on the other line. She's back. Her back is almost back in good shape. She's also wearing a tank top. Cat Pat, how are we doing today?
I'm good. Yes, I'm back. It feels like I've been gone for a really long time, even though it's only been a week.
Were you jealous?
Was I jealous that you recorded last week? Yeah. Well, yeah, my mom was like, well, my daughter's not on, but I'm going to listen this week anyway. But yeah, to let the listeners know where I was, I've been having a lot of lower back problems. I've been in and out of the doctor, so they sent me to the ER on Monday night when we were set to record, and I was waiting for about 5 hours to get an MRI, and then I didn't get my MRI and I was sent home. So there you have it, folks.
How pissed were you?
Extremely, especially because I was still in a hospital gown and I was in the hallway in a bed. Like, there was no room for me. So I was kind of like half naked in the hospital hallway.
God, that sounds like a nightmare.
I was sitting
at the end of the day, you just, yeah, not great.
I was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna like get going. No, I was gonna say they were waiting for the neurosurgeon to come talk to me, and he was in surgery, and they were like, okay, this is actually gonna take way longer. You can stay the night, and I'm like, I'm not paying thousands of dollars to stay the night in the ER. No, thank you.
No. No. Well, you're waiting on some results. You're on the up and up. All the So Many Screens listeners send some positive vibes Cat Pat's way. Glad you're back.
Yes.
To do what we do best, which is talk about streaming television and films. So last week, if anyone missed out, had Will DeFries on to talk about my personal favorite show of the year, Ted Lasso. One of Will's as well. If you haven't watched Ted Lasso yet, go watch it. Listen to last week's episode. We went spoiler deep on just an incredible show. So check that out. This week, we're back on our spooky season train. We are going to talk about The Haunting of Bly Manor, the Netflix original series, which we were supposed to talk about last week, and we pushed it to this week. We're also going to talk some Pixar and some Space Jam news, just to keep it kind of like all over the place, to keep it very multi-screened, if you will. So some news dropped. Actually, what should we start with? Total, your call, Kate. You were out. What do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's start with the little Space Jam action.
Space Jam.
Pretty relevant.
Yes. As longtime listeners of the pod know, Space Jam, the 1996 original, is one of Tap Pat's favorite movies, top five.
It is. Yeah, I would say top five, for sure.
And we're recording this on Monday, October 19th. Just yesterday, October 18th, a synopsis for Space Jam, A New Legacy, the sequel to Space Jam, was shared on Twitter by one of the writers, Ben Mettler. And he described it on Twitter as being certifiably bananas and something he cannot wait to see in theaters. The synopsis does seem to be appear to be legitimate. People confirmed it in numerous sources, so it made waves in the Twitter sphere yesterday. I can't talk. I was on a bachelor party all weekend. Did you take a look at the synopsis, Kate?
I did. And I love describing the movie as certifiably bananas. Like, I'm just picturing something that's like really wacky and zany. So I have high hopes, but yeah, it sounds interesting. LeBron James and his son. And I don't understand, though, like, bringing in the Batman characters and all of that jazz.
Yeah, so for those who haven't read the synopsis or maybe didn't see the tweet, the synopsis from the official account from this writer is, during a trip to the Warner Brothers studio, NBA superstar LeBron James and his son accidentally get trapped within a world that contains all of Warner Brothers' stories and characters, which is under the control of a malfunctioning, all-powerful force named Al G.
Not Dude, what the hell is
Allie
that?
G. With the help of Bugs Bunny, LeBron must navigate through a never-before-imagined world filled with iconic movie scenes and characters as they reassemble the Looney Tunes to rescue his lost son. So it's not a basketball game? I'm very confused.
It said there was a basketball game at one point. It said, like, hold on, now I have to pull it up, but LeBron and the Toons have to unravel Al G's mysterious plan and win an epic basketball game against digital gamified super versions of the NBA and WNBA's biggest stars as the world watches.
Okay, so this writer describing this plot as bananas is pretty on point, but I don't love it. I don't think it sounds interesting to me.
I don't understand most of what's going on in this. Why is his name Al G? That's my first question. I mean, I like Don Cheadle, so that'll be cool, but it just sounds like it's going to be doing a lot, like doing way too much.
I think what it's trying to do is like expand on this like extended universe thing that every movie studio has, like how Marvel has this extended universe. So Warner Brothers has this with Batman movies, and I think the Lego movies might be Warner Brothers. So like it's, you know, so LeBron is going to be like an animated version of himself, like navigating like their different properties. That's the part I don't really understand. And honestly, overall, I've been disappointed that they're making another Space Jam. How have you felt about this news?
I'm just, like, annoyed. Like, enough is enough already, because I tweeted this from our account, but I feel like every, like, 6 months there's an article that's like, Space Jam 2 is officially in the works, and that's been going on for, like, the past 5 years. So, are we getting it? Are we not? I mean, apparently we are, but I like that it's LeBron James, because I think that's, like, the best choice for the role.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I really kind of hate this era of remakes, so, and sequels. I think it's kind of lame. It's been done. But at the same time, I do like in Marvel movies when it's like the whole cast together, like all the Avengers. Yeah. And I like in Looney Tunes how it's all of the Looney Tune characters. So that part I'll probably like, but we will see.
Yeah, like the combination of all the universes is cool. I personally am not a giant LeBron James fan, but that's more for my own personal like sports fandom and basketball teams that I've rooted for. And LeBron James has always been very vocal about how he doesn't like the direct comparisons to Michael Jordan that everyone seems to make. And this is just going to like fuel those flames. Like you're basically trying to recreate what's some consider some of the greatest like animated sports movie of all time with one of, if not the best athlete of all time. So that's what, I don't know, it just seems complicated, it seems forced, it seems like, I don't love that LeBron's, like, including his son in it, whether or not, like it'll be played by his actual son, Bronny James, or not, is up for question, but, like, I don't know, it just feels like, we get it, LeBron, you're a family man, like, I don't know, like, I just love the 96 version. So I pulled up the 96 version synopsis, and to me, it still makes a ton of sense and is super clear-cut, but reading it out loud to some of our younger listeners, who knows? They might go, what the fuck is this? So the synopsis of the 1996 Space Jam film is, Swackhammer, an evil alien theme park owner, needs a new attraction at Moron Mountain. When his dame, the Nerdlux, head to Earth to kidnap Bugs Bunny and the Looney Tunes, Bugs challenges them to a basketball game to determine their fate. The aliens agree, but they steal the powers of NBA basketball players, including Patrick Ewing and Charles Barkley. So Bugs gets some help from basketball superstar Michael Jordan. Now that seems very straightforward to me, even though reading it, it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. No, now that you say that, I did not know those little aliens were called the Nerdlux until a few months ago when we were talking about Space Jam. But yeah, that plot seemed pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Like you mentioned, why would LeBron James sign up to do a movie that Michael Jordan was already in if he doesn't want to be compared to Michael Jordan?
Why wouldn't he just create, like, his own Space Jam, whatever that may be? You can still do an animated movie. There'll be some comparisons to Space Jam, but don't do the same fucking thing. That's my biggest problem with LeBron James has been, from day one, he's been kind of a cornball. Now, this isn't a reason to hate anybody. I don't hate him. I just have always rolled my eyes at everything he's done. And this feels like the most transparently torn ball, like, emulating thing he's done of Michael Jordan. Like, really, you don't want the comparisons, but you're going to try to, like, take the mantle of this movie that he made from the 90s 25 years after the fact. It's a bit of a stretch.
I would imagine he's getting paid a very handsome sum of money for doing this.
I would imagine the same.
I mean,
the movie is directed by Malcolm Lee. It's actually produced by Ryan Coogler, who produced Black Panther, which is pretty cool. Ooh.
If someone were offering me like a large sum of millions of dollars, I would probably do this movie, even though I didn't want to be compared to the person who did it the first time around.
Cat Pat stars in Space Jam 3. The Bachelorette edition.
Oh my god.
Or something, I don't know. the movie is set to release next July, July 16th, 2021. So we're going to be hearing Space Jam 2 related news for the next 9 months. Every 2 weeks, we'll have a new headline that, like, Twittersphere, Barstool will post about, and people will be tweeting their hot takes about. So I don't know. I'm already tired of it as well. Just show me the fucking movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get the show on the road.
So before we talk about The Haunting of Bly Manor, I did want to touch on some Pixar-related news. So if you've been listening to So Many Screens since day one, you know that about a month and a half ago, Kate and I reviewed the new Mulan movie, the live-action Mulan movie that came to Disney+. We had tepid thoughts on the film. It was did not meet our expectations. Again, it was just like this Space Jam situation where we're comparing it too much to the animated original, which was beloved. So just this past week, Pixar announced that their 2020 animated film Soul, their big release for the year, is going to be released exclusively on Disney Plus on Christmas Day, December 25th, 2020. And it will not be released at a premium price. Any Disney Plus subscriber will have access to this movie on Christmas Day. Kate, what are your thoughts on this move by Disney Plus?
I mean, that'll be cool that you don't have to pay the $30. That's great.
I think this is a genius move by Disney.
I'm interested.
It's genius for one reason.
What is the reason?
The reason is that Disney Plus has been downloaded or has been subscribed to by 70 million households. So on Christmas Day this year, over 100 million people are going to see this movie. Many, many more than if it had been released in theaters. 100 million people in a 24-hour period are going to view this movie Soul, which I think is a very, very cool kind of cultural moment that we'll all get to experience. What else is anyone else going to do on Christmas Day? Next to nothing. There's basketball on in the early afternoon, but that evening when everyone's full of booze and leftovers and they've opened their presents, what is the whole family going to do? They'll probably flip on the newest Pixar movie.
That's a great point. And shout out to my fellow Jews. Like, that's our thing. Go to the movies on Christmas. I actually do celebrate Christmas. So, but yeah, I mean, that'll be perfect.
I mean, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to, like, do outstanding things for both Disney+. Not that Disney needs our help, but just compared to, I think they fumbled the bag with Mulan. We talked about it. Didn't have a great reception. Not a lot of people paid money for it. Turns out in December, they're going to release Mulan on Disney Plus without that premium price tag anyways. So, I don't know. It feels like they learned from their mistake a little bit. Soul's going to be released as it should be for free. Not for free, but for anyone who subscribes to Disney Plus.
Agreed. Enough with making us pay money on top of paying money.
Yeah, what the fuck is this? For those who don't know, Soul stars Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey, Questlove, David Dibbs from Hamilton, and Angela Bassett. It's about a middle school teacher who has long dreamed of performing jazz music on stage. He finally gets his chance after impressing some other jazz musicians during an opening act. However, an untimely accident causes his soul to be separated from his body, and he has to proceed to the great beyond, where he has to escape the great before, a world where souls develop personalities, quirks, and traits before being sent off to Earth. Cat Pat, I'm all in.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures for the movie, and I can already tell this is going to be very cute and heartwarming, as are most Pixar movies, but there's like the little soul creatures are like these little glowing turquoise dudes, and yeah, this is going to be cute. This is going to be like Inside Out levels of cute.
Yeah, it's gonna make me cry unexpectedly, just like Coco did. Went into Coco with really no initial impression. Came out of there a changed man. I guarantee you, Soul's gonna do the same thing. There will be no dry eyes on Christmas Day around the country.
I'm sure. This will be a great family film.
And really quick, last note, the score of the film was done by Trent Reznor, the former lead singer and head writer of Nine Inch Nails, and Atticus Ross. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross have created this entire new career for themselves where they score movies. And they won an Oscar for scoring a little movie called The Social Network 10 years ago. So super excited to see what they have in store for this film that sounds like it's about your soul and what music does to your soul. And these are two great musicians who are doing that. So I can't wait. I'd love to do Pixar Week with you at some point, Tat. We should probably get that done sooner rather than later, right?
Yeah, because we didn't include Pixar in Disney Week. So that might be good. Yeah, we should probably get on that.
Yeah. Okay, on to what we've been teasing now for 2 weeks now. The Haunting of Bly Manor. So tell me about your experience watching the show. You've actually watched it a whole hell of a lot more than I have. I've gotten about halfway through the series. It's a Netflix original series. It's a follow-up to The Haunting of Hill House. It's the second entry in the Haunting Anthology series, which means an anthology means essentially it's similar cast members, but a completely different story. You recommended it to me. I went in no expectations and was pleasantly surprised. But I want to hear yours version first, and then we'll talk about what I'm experiencing.
Yes. Okay. So I have watched all of the first season and up to episode 8. So I've watched it 1.8 times.
So why did you watch it twice?
Okay, so we were only going to watch a few episodes to record, and then obviously things got pushed back, and I really liked the show, so I kept watching it, and then I finished it, and probably not even 5 minutes later, Wayne comes up to me, and he asks if I've ever heard of Bly Manor, and I was like, that's literally the show I just finished watching in this room a minute ago. He was like, oh, well, do you want to maybe rewatch it with me? I'm like, bro, I just finished it, but of course, like I said, yes, I'm rewatching it, but I'm picking up on a lot of things I missed. So I don't recommend rewatching the entire season, but I do recommend after you finish it, rewatching the first episode.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say we're going to spoil some stuff from here on out with, or do you not want to spoil stuff? Do you want to tease a little bit more?
I feel like we kind of have to spoil a little.
Yeah. It's been on Netflix since October 9th, so it's been 10 days. I mean, people have had about a week and a half to check it out. Yeah, let's throw spoilers a little bit. So I think the reason it's probably worth a rewatch is there's a lot of shit happening in the background in a lot of these scenes. There are ghosts everywhere in this house, aren't there, Cat Pat?
Yes, there are. Have you seen Hill House?
I have not seen Hill House. I know nothing about Hill House.
Oh, okay. See, in Hill House, there's a lot more hidden ghosts. So I kind of knew to look out in the background for some of these hidden ghosts. But yes, there's quite a few.
Yeah. So essentially, the loose plot synopsis of the show is that there is a nanny, Danny Clayton. She's American. She's played by Victoria Pedretti. She comes to work at Bly Manor, which is looks like it's outside the city of London. She's basically caretaking these two young children, Miles and Flora. Their parents tragically died. Their uncle, Henry Wingrave, has no time for them, so she's been hired to go take care of them and the house. There's a housekeeper, there's a chef, there's a gardener that also help. And, her first night in Bly Manor, she starts seeing things, and it just gets worse from there. Yeah, what were your thoughts on the show overall, Tat Pat?
Well, I obviously really liked it. I do think that Hill House was a little better. I think it was a little more complex of a storyline, I guess. But I love Bly Manor because I really love all the characters. They're really intriguing. They pull me in. It has a lot of heart to it, even though it is pretty scary. Well, it's supposed to be a scary show, I guess, is what I mean. But yeah, there's a lot of different plot lines, I guess, that raise questions. And I'm like, oh, well, what's this? Maybe it's that. I don't know. So I just like a show that kind of has a mystery to it. And I need to keep watching to find out what happened and if this will be explained. But so far, really love it. I love the guy that plays Peter Quint. He's a very attractive young man. And I also love the actress who plays Danny. She was in last season of Hill House. She was the star of that season. She's the star of this season. So far, so good.
Really quick, the actress who plays Danny, Vittoria Pedretti, who I just mentioned, she's got a bit of a Hillary Duff thing going on this season. Did you notice that?
I didn't really pick up on that, but I can kind of see it.
Maybe that's just me, like, I remember Hillary Duff in her heyday. They've just got a similar bone structure, and she's blonde this season. I just, every time she came on screen, I was like, I can't help but confuse her with Hillary Duff. That's just a little aside. Yeah, the character of Peter, all of his scenes take place in flashbacks. This show does a great job of, like, jumping around through time, and it kind of does it to confuse you about timelines and people's state of beings and whether or not people are alive or dead. And it's meant to kind of throw you off guard a little bit, which I liked a little bit. It kind of keeps you guessing. You're trying to connect dots as the episodes go by. You realize, and this is, we're kind of getting into spoilers things here, I realized that, like, halfway through, you're like, oh, the reason people are acting strange or that is that they're dead or they're possessed by a ghost. And you begin to realize who's possessing who, what, why people are acting certain ways. And as the show goes on, each character is given kind of their day in the sun. They have a whole episode kind of dedicated to them. You find out their backstory, what happened to them. And I really liked that structure. I just finished, like, an hour before we started recording episode 5, which is the episode about Mrs. Gross, who's, like, the longtime housekeeper at Bly Manor, what she went through, how she tragically died, and who is possessing her. So really interesting. What was your favorite, like, who are some of your favorite characters? What was one of your favorite episodes?
Ooh, well, I think my favorite episodes are ones you haven't seen yet, so I won't spoil, but I am... I really love Flora. Like, I know she's the cute little girl, but something about her, like, she sends a chill down my spine. She's really creepy.
Yeah.
And I just love the way she's like, it's perfectly splendid. Everything is perfectly splendid. But, yeah, she's a cutie. I love Danny. She has a really interesting backstory. I forget. Have you gotten to, like, a little bit of her backstory yet? Okay, yes.
So I just found out why she's being haunted by the ghost with the glasses that have, like, the reflections in them. And you find out who that was to her in her life and what happened to that person. And so that made sense to me. And I liked that plot.
Me too. That was a really good part.
I disagree with you on the kid thing. I cannot stand Flora and Miles. I think that overall, little kids with British accents are so annoying to me. They're written in a way where they're super proper already in the way they speak, and it's really tough to write for children, so you tend to write them a little bit more adult. And then you come to realize, spoiler alert, that one of the kids is being essentially possessed by an adult in the cast. So it becomes very confusing and very annoying to me when, like, Miles is like, come along now, it's time for dinner, and you're just like, come on, man, I don't know, just be a kid for me, like, have fun, laugh, smile, like, it doesn't convince me.
No, I feel that, because I don't really like Miles. I only like Flora. Miles gives me the creeps. Like, did you get to the episode where they're doing story time? You did, right?
Yes, I did. That's early on. That's episode 2 or 3.
Okay, yes. I see they're all blending together now, but him has this little puppet creature thing when he's telling this really depressing story about a bunch of puppets who were abandoned by their master. It just really creeped me out. Something about him I really don't like. He's really unsettling.
So, and I think that's the point. I think the actor, Benjamin Ainsworth, does a great job of translating that. But so that whole scene to me was just, I was rolling my eyes because it's like, that's not the type of play two kids would put on. They would put on some stupid fairy tale, like, dumbed down, like, little kid version of something. So this, like, really mature, twisted horror story that they're putting on, I understand that it has its place in this Netflix original horror series, but just doesn't really, like, live in reality to me.
No, that's a good point. Because, yeah, like you said, the little play they put together was very, had great writing for an 8 and 10-year-old, so.
Yeah. And I think you said earlier, like, it was very creepy. This show is very creepy. I don't think it's a scary show. There weren't many times when I was jumping out of my skin, scared to, like, turn off the lights and go to bed. It just has this ominous, foreboding feeling surrounding it at all times. There are ghosts that kind of pop out every once in a while and a couple jump scares, but I don't know about you, Tate. I wasn't like, oh, man, that was very scary. It was more just like, oh, that was really surprising and unexpected.
Yeah, I thought the first few episodes were kind of scary. Like, I think the ghost that Danny kept seeing was really scary. Something about it I really didn't enjoy. And obviously the Lady of the Lake is quite terrifying. Mm-hmm. But yes, there's not a lot of jump scares, which is good.
And which I think is like lends itself to its good writing and its like great performances. Because like, you know, usually a shittily written or poorly cast horror movie or TV series just relies on jump scares to like get its point across. But this doesn't. And I think it's really due to the cast. It's strong across the board. Couple fun facts about the cast. It's just me doing my, like, Google all the people that were in that week's episode and find out some fun things about them. Henry Thomas, who plays Henry Wingrave, the uncle of Flora and Miles, who hires Danny in episode 1. Do you know his most famous role?
Yes, I do, because I read this on Twitter.
Yeah, he's Elliot from E.T. E.T., one of the most famous movies of all time. He was essentially the star of that. So it's really great to see the actor Henry Thomas getting great roles later on as an adult. Most of the time you don't hear about child actors going on to much success. So that was cool. Seeing him as an adult was a little surprising to me. I was like, I know this guy from somewhere. Where is it? Turns out he's from E.T.
See, I knew E.T. was from a while ago, but I didn't realize it was like this long ago that he's now a full-grown adult.
1982, so I mean, that's 48 years ago.
Wait,
Jesus,
that's 48.
Christ. No, 38 years ago. I can't do math.
Yeah, sorry. No, you're okay, that's right. Again. I was going to say, how old am I?
It was 48 years ago, then that dude would be like a lot older. But yeah, that movie's older than you and even me, which is
surprising. Yeah, so it came out exactly 10 years before I came to this earth.
Before this earth was blessed with Cat's presence. And then Flora, do you know her famous side job or like her main
role? Oh my God, yes. Yeah, she's Peppa Pig.
Shout out our boys Kyle Bandujo and PJ Hart, who spoke a lot about Peppa Pig on the Dadgum podcast, RIP.
Yes, I mean, everyone knows Peppa Pig. Like, I feel like even if you don't have a kid, you know who Peppa Pig is.
Yeah, just kind of like transcended like culture and social media. And yeah, I don't have a kid. I certainly know. And I think her voice is extremely annoying. So I'm assuming Peppa Pig's voice is extremely annoying.
Aw, see, I think her voice is so cute. And every time she's on the screen, I'm like, Flora's so cute. Like, she's so proper.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm not really on board with, like, having kids. Maybe I'm going to be one of those people who doesn't have kids. So, like, that might be it. I don't like kids, maybe.
Oh, see, I, like, I don't have baby fever, but, like, I kind of do.
Yeah, you just hosted a baby shower like 2 weeks
ago. True. It was more of a sippancy.
So millennial.
I know. Well, okay, this is off topic, but I was going to say, we had this whole thing. I was like, okay, let's come over, bring the baby, like whatever, we'll get together. And then after we had our little get together, my friend and I were like, holy shit, we had a sippancy and we didn't even realize it. Like, we weren't purposely planning it to be a sippancy, but it was. But
yeah.
Anyway, Bly Manor, have you spotted any hidden ghosts, like specific ones?
Oh yeah. If you watch it on a big widescreen, you see outside of the frame, like outside of whoever's on screen talking, you see things moving. You see someone walking across the living room or something pass by the window. And I really like that. I think it makes things like very uneasy, because if you were in that scene and you suddenly felt someone walking behind you, that would be insanely unsettling.
Yes, there's one I always see, especially in the first few episodes. It's like a kind of looks like a plague doctor with like the pointed beak mask.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen that one?
I have seen that one a couple
times. That one really gives me the creeps. But he's in a few episodes.
I'm not particularly scared of the lady in the water.
Really?
Should I be? Does she get scarier? Maybe I'm just...
I mean, she just scares me. I don't know. She's pretty... I don't know. Just, like, her mannerisms are quite haunting.
Can I ask some questions that, like... I just... They're very spoilerish questions. Like, some questions, and can you answer them for me? Like, because I have only seen half the show.
Yes. Do ask.
Okay. Is the lady in the water Miss Jezel?
No.
Okay.
I thought it was, too.
Is Flora alive, but ends up dead?
No.
And is Miles dead already, or is he just inhabited by the ghost of somebody?
He's alive.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So there is hope for these kids, is what I'm asking. They're not like ghost kids. They're just like kids who have gotten the shaft a little bit.
Yeah. Their life kind of sucks. yeah, no, wow. I thought it was going to be a lot like... my friend kind of mentioned this. She was like, I feel like this is Netflix's version of American Horror Story Murder House, where
it's
getting you to think, like, everyone is dead, but that's not the case.
Oh, here's my last one. Are Jamie, Mrs. Gross, and Owen... I know that one of those three is dead already. Are all three of them dead?
No.
Oh, okay, cool. See, this is actually piquing my curiosity, because I want to find out who ends up alive, who gets out of this thing, you know.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I had so many questions, like, who is dead, who is alive, what's real, what's not. And it does a really good job of answering every single question and wrapping it up really well.
Great. Good to know.
Yeah, see, I hate when shows, like, leave me having a bunch of answers. Like, I think American Horror Story, I still had a few answers. But this covers everything. And every question you have will be answered.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, leaving things open-ended can be frustrating. Sometimes it's an artistic move for, like, a film, but a TV show or a serialized version of something that you invest so much more time in than a movie, it's frustrating. Like, Lost, for example. People were very frustrated with the end of Lost. Like, because they dedicated, like, 8 years of their lives and so many hours of TV time. I understand it sometimes. A two-hour movie doesn't want to answer every question you have. That's fine. But if I dedicate, you know, this is 9 episodes, they're an hour each. If I dedicate 9 hours of my life, I want everything answered. And it sounds like it does that.
Yes, it does, which I really appreciate it. But I know I really want you to keep watching it because...
I will.
It gets so... It just... I love the way they answer every question. And you're like, oh...
I have, like, kind of a chill week. So maybe I'll finish it this week and we can talk about it on next week's episode. But yeah, so that's it for Bly Manor. Check it out if you haven't. Cat Pat's recommendation, our spooky season recommendation. If you have any thoughts, tweet at us, DM us on Instagram at So Many Screens. Before we get out of here, there's a show that you are also watching on Netflix that you wanted to talk about.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about Emily in Paris.
Emily in Paris. It's best described as a fever dream. It, like, really is. I read on Twitter, someone was like, I swear Emily in Paris was actually written in, like, 2007 and 2008, and they just got around to filming it recently, which I can totally see.
Yeah, it was just put on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's like, wants to be Gossip Girl a little bit, but less scandalous than Gossip Girl. It also is very corny, but then there's these random, like, really sexual horny moments where they make, like, sex jokes and stuff. It's like, a mishmash of things. It's not particularly good, and it definitely doesn't stimulate the brain at all. But it is good escapism TV.
So it's not trashy, but is it addictive? Like, I have no interest in watching the show. I never will watch a show. Like talk to me about it a little bit. Like, talk to me about the characters. Like, what makes it interesting? What makes you keep watching it?
See, I don't know. I really like Lily Collins, the actress.
Yep.
I've been following her for, like, since I was an avid reader of Teen Vogue back in the day. Like, okay. 2005, 6, 7, 8. And she was, like, pretty much a Teen Vogue it girl. Like, she was in a lot of issues. Her dad is Phil Collins, so she's pretty famous. Oh,
shit. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yes. Yeah, so she was, I think she did modeling, but she's been in a few things I've seen. And I just, like, generally like her. I think she's very fashionable. So I was like, I'll watch because of her. I mean, the writing is not great. It's very corny, like stereotypical mean boss. And let me find the description of what the show is. Emily in Paris, Chicago marketing exec Emily Cooper is hired to provide an American perspective at a marketing firm in Paris. So, see, I don't know. I don't know what I like about it. Yeah, it's like everything is the American perspective. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What is so different about the American perspective that they need to hire someone from Chicago and, like, bring them out to Paris so they can provide a new point of view in marketing? Like,
that's so funny.
It's just really
corny. Why wouldn't they hire her from New York?
Right? Like, why Chicago? I don't know. But it's just hilarious. She, like, thinks her ideas are so cutting edge. She's like, you guys really need to engage with your audience and create better social content. And they think it's groundbreaking.
They're like, wow, we're so glad we flew this American, we relocated this American to tell us what we all needed to hear.
Yeah, and of course, like, the boss is an older woman who doesn't really like her.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's just very corny. I don't know why I'm watching it. I think I'm watching it just to finish it because I'm already 8 episodes deep. But it's just super light. I do like that it's set in Paris. It's very cutesy. Great outfits. Very great outfits. And yeah, I mean, there's like one kind of decent storyline where, spoiler alert, she kissed her friend's boyfriend without knowing that they were dating.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm curious to see how that'll play out.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, but I mean, it's nothing you need to watch at all.
Good. I was hoping you weren't going to be like, please watch it so we can talk about it next week. I'm happy to finish out Bly Manor, but that sounds like a fucking nightmare to me.
It's just, there was one episode where she's at an influencer launch because she kind of becomes like an influencer throughout the season. Sure. And it's just so obnoxious. Excuse me. I said that really weird. It's so obnoxious. It's all these people with their selfie sticks taking videos at like a beauty event. And it's just very phony, but it's probably how these launches really are. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's Emily in Paris. I don't really recommend it. But if you're a girl and you used to like Gossip Girl and The OC and 90210, the remake, maybe check it out.
Okay. It's funny that you bring up that influencer lunch thing because the show High Fidelity on Hulu did an episode like that, and it's done very well. She's basically like reconnecting with an ex. This is the Zoe Kravitz character, and turns out her ex has become this big social media influencer, so she goes to this fancy dinner at her ex's fancy apartment with all these designer clothes. She meets all these other famous people, and at the end, she realizes or discovers that it's all rented. The ex rented the apartment just for the evening, just so they could take some photos at, you know, fancy in a fancy closet and on a fancy balcony, and basically that an influencer's life is a sham, which, as we all know, is pretty close to the truth. And does a really good job of that very similar story plot. So if you want to watch a better show that handles that same issue, check out High Fidelity on Hulu. I've only talked about it 17,000 times on this podcast.
I know. High Fidelity and Space Jam. They just keep coming up.
Yeah. Everyone's like, we got it. We got it, JR. We got it, Cat Pat. Well, this was fun, as usual. We are glad to have you back, Cat Pat. Follow the social accounts, guys. Super important that we wanted to get to 1,000 Instagram followers by the end of October. So if you haven't yet, give @SoManyScreens a follow on Instagram and Twitter. Anything else, Tate?
Yeah, follow us @SoManyScreens. Follow me @TheRealCatPat. I'm glad to be back.
Good to have you back. Are we doing more scary, spooky season content next week?
Ooh, well, that new A24 movie is dropping on Friday.
That's right.
But it's on Apple A24. Yes. We'll talk. We'll talk offline, I guess. But
we'll talk offline. We'll let everyone know. Follow the social accounts to find out what we're doing this week. And have a great rest of your week, guys. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right. Bye, guys.